The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, as we enter the final week before Christmas, the struggle and conflict deepens in Ukraine 10 months on. Friday saw Russian units open fire with more than 70 missiles targeting Ukraine's water and energy infrastructure. And as temperatures continue to plummet to below freezing, what is next for the war in Ukraine? When or how will it end? Joining me now to talk about this is Duncan Bullivant, special advisor to the head of the Bosnia Peacekeeping Mission, part of the UK mission to Kosovo in 1999, and CEO of the Henderson Group, an international risk management advisory. Duncan, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, first of all, what do you make of what Putin is doing to the energy and water infrastructure? I mean, it is, by any of the Geneva Conventions, a war crime.
It is, but I think several weeks ago we talked about the appointment of General Sorovkin as Putin's commander of the military operation in Ukraine. And it's supporting his objectives. So his primary mission was to solidify what would they call a line of defense. In other words, stop the Ukrainians from taking back any more territory. And that included some withdrawals. And now his primary mission is to bring about a situation where negotiations can take place to see Russia retain the territory that it's taken and to prevent Ukraine from retaking that territory. So what does that mean on the ground? What it means on the ground is that they've got to work on the Ukrainians' will to fight and to try and split the Western alliance that's supporting Ukraine. So taking out infrastructure, damaging water supplies, damaging power supplies at this time of the year, is all part of that campaign to try and demoralize the Ukrainian population.
So it's the equivalent of a medieval siege where they would have starved out a population. What they do is they deprive them of potable water, deprive them of power at the most vulnerable time of the year. It's a very, I suppose, primitive way of bringing a population to heel.
Yes, it is. It's a direct assault on the morale and the will to fight of the Ukrainian people, which they hope will somehow influence the political situation. But it's a pretty significant miscalculation at this point.
What is your reading of how the war is going to go? Because with the exception of missiles and so on the ground, hostilities will probably tail off a bit given the temperatures. But when those temperatures begin to rise again, what next?
Well, yes, the much vaunted spring offensive. Russia's pretty much run out of conventional artillery ammunition. It's really is down to very low stocks indeed. And Russia's military doctrine is very heavy on the use of artillery. You know, thousands and thousands of rounds of ammunition have been expended over the last few weeks alone. Whilst Russia tries to replenish those stocks and it's seeking ammunition from North Korea, from Iran and China, although China is claiming not to be supplying it with such ammunition, whilst they try to replenish those stocks, at the same time, the Ukrainians are trying to get their hands on equipment that would help them fight an offensive battle rather than a defensive battle. And the Ukrainians' three priorities in terms of the equipment they're now looking at from their Western supporters is one, more tanks, two, long-range rockets, and three, more combat jets. These are all really designed to assist Ukraine in terms of breaking into and recapturing territory taken by the Russians at the beginning of the campaign and actually going back to restore the integrity of Ukraine to pre-2014 boundaries. So Russia's position is really they're preparing for the offensive in the spring, but they are on the back foot. They're not going to be able to replenish the trained infantry they've lost. They're not going to be able to replenish the heavy armor that they've lost. So they will now, over the next few months, try and work away at the resolve of Western nations to continue to support this campaign.
Now, what about Putin's mercenaries, the Wagner Group, so-called? How numerous are they? Presumably, they're being paid to do what they do, and that is their motivation.
Yep, they're a pretty shady group, although for a secretive organization, they seem to be more and more in the news at the moment. We think there are possibly up to 1,000 active members of the Wagner Group in Ukraine at the moment. Their primary mission seems to be to support and bolster Russian military activities. In other words, they're being used as sort of a known entity. They're probably slightly better trained, slightly better equipped than the recent conscripts that have been put into the front line. But the quality of the Wagner mercenaries is not what it was perhaps 10 years ago, certainly not in 2014, where they were all experienced combat veterans of various Russian campaigns. A lot of these guys now have been released from prison early on the basis that they will go and fight as part of their resettlement campaign for cash, yes, but not a huge amount. But I think the most important thing about the Wagner Group at this point is to really, it's a really good indicator of the criminal nature of the Russian state and how far things have fallen over the last 15 to 20 years. These guys, the company doesn't actually exist. They are loyal very much to the Putin element of the regime. They are operating way beyond the borders of Ukraine. They're operating on a global basis to secure mineral resources, diamonds, gold, particularly in Africa, Mali, Central African Republic, and more recently, Burkina Faso. These guys appear, out of nowhere. They do deals with local governments, secure mines, take the diamonds and the gold as payment, and then try and fight campaigns, counterinsurgency campaigns against various groups on the ground. But what is really worth noting here, they're not operating in a commercial capacity. They're operating in a proxy way. These are an extension of Putin's regime. Be under no illusion about that at all.
Now, where might this end up? There are a number of scenarios. Putin eventually, he stays in power until he's too old to continue, and then he retires to a dacha on the Black Sea and lives out his life. Can't go anywhere because he will be a pariah internationally, but that's what lies in store. Or perhaps a more bloody end.
Yes, there are a number of scenarios which I think are running through people's minds at the moment. One is that the military campaign has failed. Where does the war go in the next 12 months? It's probably Russia's strategic objective now to negotiate a settlement which sees them secure the gains they made in 2014 and some of the gains they've made since then, including the Crimea. The Ukrainians aren't going to let them have that. So the war will continue. Putin will suffer defeat after defeat, and his political capital will wane. There's going to come a tipping point where, Russia has a history of getting rid of leaders that fail in war. And if there is a point at which Putin sees himself being at threat of being assassinated or imprisoned, or the state turning against him, or the people turning against him, then what are his options? I suspect that he is unlikely to put up a last stand. There's been speculation recently coming out of various Russia watchers and commentators that he's trying to do deals with countries such as Venezuela, who might provide him with a safe haven. He has got billions and billions of dollars stashed away overseas, so supporting a lifestyle isn't the problem. It's really a case of where he might go, where he would be well received and safe.
Mm. I think, say Venezuela, that wind can blow either pro-America or anti-America, depending on the political situation on the ground in Venezuela. So, if you were Putin, you would not necessarily be permanently safe there, even if you could guarantee yourself a few years there in relative safety. Political winds blow.
I think the nature of the campaign in the last few months has been such that any leader, be it Putin or anybody else that has responsibility for some of the atrocities that have been committed in Ukraine, will be subject to an arrest warrant at some point. And any country that is then harboring him is going to have that issue, because sanctions will follow if they don't hand him over. So it brings us back to this of the last stand scenario. And I think in Putin's mind at this stage, and I don't have any particular access to what he thinks on a day-to-day basis. I just read a lot and talk to people that analyze the situation, is that, in Putin's mind, he could still probably pull something off here. And that, he'll be looking at a settlement which sees something less than catastrophe. The problem is that the Ukrainians aren't playing ball with that. They're not going to settle for a negotiated settlement that will allow him to remain in place. Now, this brings us close to two potential scenarios. One is that he escalates the situation. And I think you'll see a lot of rhetoric over the next few months in the Western media, where the Russians make veiled threats and they use their various social media outlets to again, saber-rattling with nuclear weapons, which we know at the moment has been an empty threat, but all sorts of other sort of potential threats of acts of terror, or that, you know, Western tourists aren't safe in certain parts of the world, et cetera, et cetera. I suspect you'll see this language increasing as they try and divide the Western support for the Ukrainian campaign, and also play on the fact that Western nations have kind of depleted their own reserves of weaponry and ammunition. It's not been an easy run for anybody in supporting the Ukrainians. So I think you'll see a big effort now to try and break the will of the Ukrainian people, break the will of the Western supporters, and then his options will either be some form of not quite victory but not quite defeat. And if that doesn't work, then I suspect he will probably disappear. He won't hang around.
Oh, Duncan Bullivant, CEO of the Henderson Group, an international risk management advisory agency. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.